Friends, I am exhausted. I'm mentally, I'm physically, and I'm spiritually taxed. And it's not just that this week I have spent my week at our diocesan school for parish development, although that too was incredibly demanding. It's the state of the world. It's the violence around us. And for me this week, a not so subtle reminder in my own interactions with a dear friend of mine that I can be less than gracious, that violence is within me as well. This week I've found it hard not to be overwhelmed by the political and economic rifts in our world, the divisions that seem to be multiplying exponentially around us, and about my own complicity in that underlying culture of violence, a violence that is rooted in fear, fear that I try to let go of, but no matter how hard I resist, still seems to be there. And so in this moment, I don't know how much energy I have left. I certainly don't have enough to keep on top of the stream of opinion pieces hurtling back and forth from one Facebook wall to the next, and the challenge that seems to be underlying many of them, unfriend me if you don't agree. I don't have that bandwidth. And so perhaps because of that, perhaps because my so-called higher faculties are running on empty, perhaps this is why the first century world we see through the letter and the lens of the letter to the Colossians seems all eerily similar. Unless, of course, it seems like a stretch to talk about a Christian community dwelling in the shadow of an ego-driven empire. And yet, because this is a letter written in a time and place under the power of an imperial apparatus seeking to maintain its foothold on power, it's for this very reason that I'm willing to suggest that an ancient letter written to the fledgling Christian community at Colossae bears some measure of importance for us here today. Written into a world where the supreme leader counted himself the head of the pantheon of gods, greater than the mere mortals who propped him up, a self-professed deity whose promise of safety and security rivaled anyone today who might declare that or try to make sure that we believe that it was possible to make Rome great again. He promised fruitfulness and bounty, expounding upon a rich and glorious future under his superhuman leadership, all the while chewing up and spitting out anyone who didn't fit into his image of perfection. Caesar was then, as he is now, the ultimate icon and embodiment of a cannibalistic and predatory culture. And from this, so the headlines tell me, we are not immune. So overlaying our time and theirs, you might imagine rallies across the countryside in which the nativist movement has gained momentum in ways no pundit would have believed. We're smarter than that, they said. We won't be fooled. And yet at each whistle stop, each town, suburb, and city, the train keeps rolling. The money keeps flowing, and all we seem to be able to do is stand by and watch. The news of that movement is punctuated with other findings, stories of violence, oppression, and abuse. The narrative, while it has become about embracing greatness, is equally a story, as we've come to see it, hear it, experience it, and feel it. It's become equally a story rife with death. And in Caesar's world, as our own greatness, of whatever political stripe, is all too often built on the backs of those the powerful can't stand to have in their own sights. And as witnesses, as those observing from behind the scenes or the safety of our screens, our safety is not assured. And on most days, and especially this week, I feel incapable of creating a safe distance. Not even we are able to remain objective observers of all that's going on. I feel caught up in the gravitational pull. I haven't always felt it directly, and yet each act of violence has somehow done more than strike a nerve. Story after story, each replacing the next in a seemingly never-ending news cycle of death, destruction, and despair. For some, each story, each aggression, micro or macro, comes as a direct body blow. And it leaves me incapacitated to do much of anything. Draining in the chants and refrains shouted over and over until it all starts to sound the same, until it bleeds into static, which is a danger with our microphone tonight, it would seem. The empire is built on noise, and I can't seem to turn the thing off. And there are those among us with theories, the apostle says, theories, philosophies, explanation of how this is, and how this has come to be. There are those who might take us captive through clever stories and empty deceit. They weave their stories of destiny, stories rooted in the inevitability of political hegemony or the divine right of kings. Others weave their yarns through over-spiritualized explanations that see God's hand in all that is unfolding before us and within us, as if God has any part in inflicting this accursed drama on his beloved children. Held hostage by these explanations, it can feel as though the walls are closing in, as though we are stuck in our chairs, having forgotten that we have bodies, that we have wills, having forgotten that the heartbeat of Christ beats in and through us, having forgotten that our hands and feet, our mouths and minds are tools of goodness, tools of light, that all of these things put together are tools put to use for God's kingdom of justice and peace. And so when the possibilities seem limited, when fear takes over, when our consciousness has been co-opted and colonized, when we have allowed the talking heads, the self-proclaimed experts, though they make no blessed sense, to shape whatever's left of our imagination, it's into that world, it's into this world that Paul writes his letter. And he reminds us of this. Those who dominate the headlines are not in control. Those who make claims to absolute power are sorely mistaken. The mercenaries of hate, though they may have recently gained some ground, do not have the final word, nor will they ever. The arc of the moral universe is long, declared Martin Luther King Jr., but it bends towards justice. On my better days, I can believe it, but this week it's been hard. The arc of the moral universe is long, but it bends towards justice. I need to breathe that in. And then this week I read these words from our correspondent, from the author of the letter to the Colossians. You have come to fullness in Christ, who is the head of every ruler and authority, he said. Which is to say, they've got it all wrong. Beyond the snow and the noise, if we were to listen, even in the midst of the darkest, bleakest of nights, we might find ourselves embracing that vast privilege we have. To take it all of our joys and our sorrows, everything we know and all that we hoped for, to take it all to God in prayer. In the midst of all the world is throwing our way, it is prayer. It is the ability to listen deeply to God, beyond the hype, beyond the quick fixes. It is listening deeply to God and to one another that will send us forth and set us free. It is seeking reconciliation with our neighbors that will bring healing and truly change the world. This is where greatness is to be found. For Paul and for the Colossian church, this is their moment. This is the letter that reminds them, that reminds us, that in the midst of our captivity of heart, mind, soul, and strength, there is one who has come to set us free. See to it, he writes, that no one takes you captive through philosophy and empty deceit according to human tradition, according to the elemental spirits of the universe and not according to Christ the Apostle writes. Or put another way, make sure that no one takes your imaginations captive through a vacuous vision of life rooted in an oppressive regime of truth that parades itself as something other than a mere human tradition, as if it somehow had privileged access to final and universal truth about the world apart from Christ. And so I find myself reminded, and I think that we are called to remember, the one who came to proclaim release to the captives, recovery of sight to the blind. Remember the one who came to proclaim a year of jubilee and to lead the captives out of slavery to freedom. Such jubilee does not celebrate at the obliteration of ones unlike us, but jubilee, celebration, unending joy when each is made more whole, when as a body we are knit together and made one again. When we start to see each other as we are, as God created us, as members of the same body, as members with one another, of one another. For when we start to see that, we will truly start to see that it is forgiveness and not violence that will set us free. It is forgiveness and not violence that will set us free.